I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Ready for some NFL playoff talk? We've got you covered. It's Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron on 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
That is who you have, and that's what you've got up until 11:30 today, getting you set for Chargers, Patriots, then Eagles and Saints. Catch them both right here. Late this morning, early this afternoon on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Many call it the best weekend of football all year long because it goes Saturday into Sunday. You get the eight best teams in the NFL halfway completed with that. And here to recap the games from yesterday, look ahead to the ones today, look ahead a bit to the conference championships as well, potentially next week, and everything Bears in between. It's myself. I'm Nick Shepkowski alongside Anthony Herron. As always, 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. We'll read your text messages at 67011 as well. And on Twitter, he's at Big Ant Herron. I'm at Shep670. We'll participate that way as well. Coming up for you on the show today, Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly joins us at 9:40 to preview these games today and preview the rest of the playoffs. Joe Ostrowski looks at it from a gambling side at 10:20 as well to preview both of the games this afternoon that you can, again, hear right here on 670 The Score. I don't know about you last night, Big Ant, but when the Cowboys and Rams kicked off and I start watching that game and seeing the way that the Rams kind of attacked that was 39 rush attempts, and they did hit on a couple of big plays throughout in the passing game, but such heavy reliance on running the ball. Like, I could not help but think, like, man, this should be the Bears, and this should be the Bears controlling a running game, changing this entire offensive game plan from Los Angeles, and this should be the Bears that are still alive and going to the damn NFC Championship game. Unfortunately, things did not go right last Sunday, as we discussed right after the game last Sunday night. But they're close. Like, that's not that you needed further confirmation.
Right.
You lost by a point last week on a last-second field goal. But, I mean, it's the Bears are damn close to being that team in the Rams that are going to the NFC Championship game and seem to have as good offense as anyone in the league.
Yeah, the Rams and their offensive wizard, Sean McVay, and everything he's known for, and you know, we see the coaching tree of a second-year head coach expanding all throughout the football world suddenly with all these guys who've, like, had lunch with McVay at some point over the years getting their interviews and their
head
coaching
opportunities. That's why you need to go have lunch with them so then you can get a gig. Yeah,
I should do that, yeah. And then somebody just offered me a head coaching opportunity, apparently, because that seems to be what it takes. But during the game, 28 pass attempts for Jared Goff, 48 rushing attempts for the Rams. See, that to me is playoff football formula. Now, I know that's not the formula everyone aspires to, and I know it's not what's utilized by every team who ends up winning in the playoffs. But I mean, that was a fine weather game. There'd been some inclement weather beforehand, but the weather cleared up. Field conditions were nice enough. You know, defense was slipping around a bit on the field, but overall, it was nice to see a team that's thought of as this. Uber aggressive, high flying offense that does a lot of the eye candy and play action that we, you know, the different types of things that we see the Bears utilizing, but to be willing to go out there and say we're committing to running the ball. And the dominance that the Rams had on the ground is a big part of what led them to victory. And, you know, you and I are going to have 2.5 hours to, you know, we recap some of the Bears and talk about the games this coming weekend. I really like the article you wrote on 670thescore.com. I want to talk to you about that.
Okay.
Disagree with it, but
I
was impressed. I really thought it was well written, so I definitely want to discuss that at some point during
the
show.
It's like the backhanded compliment. Like,
yes,
I disagree
I'm
with everything you said, but you wrote it so well.
I'm great at those. I'm really great at the back. My wife always reminds me that the backhanded compliment is one of my specialties. But to see that, though, that to me, in addition to everything else we discussed after the game with the Bears, just the game plan that the Rams employed of saying that, yeah, we got an offensive line we're confident in, and we don't need to put it all on the shoulders of the quarterback. And they weren't, as I described the Bears offense last week in the play calling Matt Nagy and the game plan he and Mark Helfrich put together. I felt like the Bears were half pregnant last week. I don't think the Rams were half pregnant. The Rams said we're going to lead with the ground attack. They did that. They committed to it. Do the Bears have, you know, Todd Gurley and CJ Anderson? No, they don't have that in the backfield. But to me, they have a back who deserves carries, mm-hmm. pudgy or otherwise. To me, Jordan Howard deserves more carries than he got in that game last week. It would have been beneficial to Chicago's offense. It was good to see Sean McVay use that formula to success, to an 8-point victory in that game last night. And I'm hoping that not only, you know, I know Bears fans were watching it and feeling a certain way about it, and I do hope that the Bears coaching staff, or what remains of it offensively at least, and their brass are looking at that saying, you know what? There's going to be a long road to make sure we get back to that point next season, that we enter postseason play in great shape. And once we do, let's find a portion of our personality that we really think we're willing to commit to more than what I felt like the Bears did last week in establishing a running game and being at some point stubborn with a running game. And still, even Mitch Trubisky is going to be in his third year next year, just like Jared Goff's in his third year right now. But still saying it doesn't need to be so much on him. It can be on those five offensive linemen, on those one or two tight ends, on that running back, and making sure that they're a huge part of what we're doing and implementing and executing the game plan offensively. Because I just think even when the run game isn't successful, it does so many different things to offset the energy, the effort that your opponent plays with, and it does offensively take some pressure off of your own quarterback. And I do feel like that's something that would have been more beneficial to Chicago last week.
Yeah, I think it would have been beneficial, and obviously we'd probably still be talking about the Bears playing or at least recapping what they did last night at this point instead of looking ahead to the offseason. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. Text message as well. Welcome 67011. And looking at it, so much has been made of some of the teams that played yesterday and how close are the Bears and all that. One of the discussion points that keeps coming up is this race for executive of the year. That comes down to Ryan Pace of the Bears, obviously, and Chris Ballard of the Colts. The Colts get bounced in grand fashion yesterday. They lay a complete egg against Kansas City, and Kansas City runs up and down the field on them the entire first half. Well, outside of a blocked punt return for a touchdown, there was no offense to be found whatsoever from the Colts in that game. But with it, I do want to look at the Bears here and this off-season game plan, this off-season plan of attack for what they have to do. And looking at it, it's, you hear so much of, okay, well, the salary cap, they don't have much room to work with salary cap-wise, $20, $25 million. It's not like they're going to go add a whole heck of a ton and add role players, try to hopefully keep a Bryce Callahan from going somewhere else and getting a huge payday, or try to keep him on the roster because he was very valuable in that nickel spot this season. But looking at it, to me, it's not about adding anything free agent-wise. It's not about, obviously, it's not about the draft. You don't have a first or second round draft pick. Like, this is a huge step, just like you were saying, in terms of the evaluation of the coaching staff of, all right, well, maybe more of a commitment to the running game. It's a huge step for that offense. Like, the Bears' addition is going to be a second year in this offense, a second offseason in this offense, knowing it that much better for Mitch Trubisky, for Allen Robinson, who, as the year went on, continued to take off. Like, I think that was one of the more underrated or underlooked at things with this team this year was, okay, well, there's veterans because Trey Burton was signed and Allen Robinson was signed, and you have enough veteran offensive linemen on this team, and it's going to be an offense that you just kind of, Jordan Howard's been 3 years in the league now. He's going to be fine, and it's going to be hit the ground running with this offense. And I thought that it was one that, from day one, spoke to, this is going to be a process, and quite the process, and it's going to hopefully look better at the end of the year than it did at the start of the year. Well, if you watch the first half against the Eagles, it was pretty much non-existent. But I mean, that's where your gains are to be made. There's nothing free agent-wise. There's no blockbuster trade.
Right.
Forget the Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell thing. Like, that's not happening. Bears don't have the draft picks that it takes to go get Antonio Brown. They don't have, I mean, you want to go sign Le'Veon Bell, okay, feel free. You're not signing anybody else besides, like, veterans minimums on that roster. That wouldn't be your best plan of attack. The plan of attack to get better is all within what's already there. Like, there's nothing major that's going to come in that's going to just sway the direction of this or anything like that. Like, it's year two of development for this offense. Steps to be taken there. That's where they grow the most to me.
And I think that when we think back to, you know, not quite a year ago at this point, and it was a, you know, what I felt like was a young and emerging roster that needed a few pieces, and then Ryan Pace did a really effective job at adding pieces, you know, adding some talent. But what was probably the worst wide receiver core in the National Football League a year ago quickly got some depth and talent there, to the point where Kevin White was finally healthy for an entire season in the NFL and rarely, if ever, touched the field. And when he did, he was a blocker. You know, he was essentially a lead blocker, and that's your top 10 pick from not quite a handful of seasons ago. And, you know, I think that partly speaks to where Kevin White is in his development, but also just to where the talent is on this team. So that's just one example. Obviously, you know, Khalil Mack ended up, you know, finishing things off as far as being the big offseason acquisitions. But, you know, at this point a year ago, it was like, man, how far away are the Bears? How much can they really add that would enhance where they're at, that would potentially put this team in a playoff position? And at that point, none of us really anticipated the way the roster would be reshaped and reformed. So it's, you know, it's a credit to Ryan Pace that now the team's in a position where there's no glaring or gaping holes. I mean, you know, obviously kicker is a situation that's going to play out here. You and I talked about
play himself out is what it's going
to
do.
You and I talked about running back and what may happen there. We'll see what they do to try to add depth or perhaps even as it relates to this system upgrade that position. But that's going to be a difficult thing to try and manage for where they're going to be at in the draft and what's going to be available on the open market and just what their situation is within the team, because you're obviously not going to be in a hurry to get rid of Tariq Cohen, and moving Jordan Howard could be a thing that would be tricky. And, you know, and who knows whether or not they actually want to move him, or if they just felt like, all right, we figured out how he fits into our system better late in the season. But either way, they need more depth there. You know, throwing Taquan Mizell out there, and Benny Cunningham was a good special teamer, but he hasn't been a playmaker there.
Give them first half or first possession carries instead of getting the ball in Tariq Cohen's hands again.
Right.
Angry about all offseason.
But it's a roster that doesn't have glaring holes where you would say talent-wise you need a big upgrade here or there, and there's not a lot of free agents that you're in jeopardy of losing. Bobby Massey at right tackle, you know, hopefully you add depth there. You know, if you can bring him back, I think that's certainly a good thing. But even bringing him back, you want some more depth at the offensive tackle slot. And then you mentioned the secondary between what's going to happen with Callahan and Amos. Those are two guys who have certainly made plays for the Bears here in recent years, and you want to be able to work to keep them on the roster if you can. So overall, it's a team that will just need to continue to improve at their craft, and that can be a very difficult thing to do coming off of the disappointment the Bears just suffered, because it's going to be the same dudes in place. There's not going to be something that adjusts the chemistry of the locker room, because the roster makeup is going to be really different. There's going to be a lot of new faces, and you're getting used to each other, and that infuses some juice into things, because you just got a lot of guys you haven't been around before, and that's kind of new and exciting. It's going to be the same dudes going through the same program and just working towards trying to reach a similar goal to what they did last year and just go beyond it. And that's not always an easy thing. You know, I made that Rocky comparison we were on last week, where, you know, the Bears were in that Clubber Lang scenario, sure, where they were the hunter trying to go up there and catch up with the rest of the league, because they hadn't been there, you know, since the start of this decade. And now that they've caught up with him, so what are you doing to take the next step? And it's not going to be a next step. It's going to be like, all right, let's go out and spend and guarantee $84 million to some new quarterback and see what that does to take us to another level. There's not going to be a splash for the Bears this offseason, and so there's not going to be something that the management's going to do that's going to shake up the team in a way that infuses energy into their offseason program. But the offseason program is still a very key and vital segment that this team needs to try to perform at a high level, specifically at the position of quarterback, for Mitch Trubisky to make sure he continues improving at his craft.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that I look at is just, okay, you've closed the gap between you and the good teams in the NFL. You've been the laughingstock of the league really for, what, 6 years, seven seasons, whatever it's been. Like, you haven't competed for playoff spots outside of 2013. You haven't been there in however long. You closed that. You won a division. Congratulations. You know what sucks? Playing just one playoff game and losing on your home field to the defending champs in a game that you had every opportunity to win, offensively, defensively, special teams-wise. You had chances all over the place in that game to make plays, and simply you just did not make enough of them as a whole, as a collective. And that's the part that, man, I know it's easy to say from afar, it's easy to scream from a microphone, and all right, well, that should be motivation in itself enough, but I truly believe that. It's like, you're that close. you are that close. And if I'm looking at it and I'm Mitch Trubisky or I'm the Bears offense in any way, it's, I know what put the bread on the table for this team this year. It was the defense. It was the defense making huge plays. It was the defense after we turned the ball over offensively, they'd go out there and force a three and out and force a field goal instead of allowing a touchdown, or they'd go and cause a turnover themselves and get the ball back. And they did that seemingly all year long in this for this team. That's what I'd kind of look at and be like, okay, that should be the rallying cry. You don't need some big-time right tackle to come in free agent-wise. You don't need big-time another tight end or wide receiver or trade Jordan Howard and go get another running back. None of that. Like, it's what you have is right there. Like, there's not going to be some huge acquisition, and there shouldn't have to be. It should be year two of a system and year three of Mitch Trubisky as an NFL quarterback, and that's where you should go with this thing, and that's where steps should be taken in the offense. I'm not saying it should be elite, not saying it should be the Chiefs, not saying it should be the Rams, but it should take a step in that direction to be a top third-ish type offense in the league next year to much better complement a top-tier defense.
It's a, there's the skill available. There's the personnel on this roster to do that, to become that. And, you know, as simple as it may seem, yeah, a lot of that is going to come down to Mitch Trubisky. This is assuming that the other guys, that the receivers don't all like get slow and pudgy over the offseason, right, or whatever else. But assuming that the personnel who's on the team right now is at least at the level they were this year, then you do want to see growth at that position. If you do, then there's enough skill on this squad, assuming health, to be one of those top third type of offenses in the league. And the interesting thing is, when I look towards next season, you know, there were some games this year where the Bears had to sort of grind it out, even games that they thoroughly controlled, but it wasn't always because the offense was uber explosive, and they had like a, you know, like a 1.5 or a 2-score lead towards the end of the game. So it's like, okay, we know we're going to win, let's salt it away. But it wasn't necessarily like the, you know, there weren't a lot of games where the offense was just blowing the doors off of people and you immediately had a 3 or 4-score lead because the offense was so explosive. It can be difficult to win grinded out type of games again coming off of what the Bears went through this season, especially because to me that's not, you know, and Matt Nagy says a lot of the right things, but you do have an offensive-minded head coach, and, mm-hmm. and it is thought of as a squad that wants to become more explosive and more consistently aggressive on offense. So to be a grinded out team, it's almost going to feel like by default. Like that's what it was in a lot of the games this year. When the Bears had to grind out victories, it was almost by default because the defense was so amazing, so ferocious, held opponents to so few points and took the ball away so much and put points on the board at a clip like no one else in the National Football League, then your defense was really the ones who were controlling the games for you and allowing you in the fourth quarter of some contest to be able to close it out because you had a multi-score lead. More of that was because of the defense and the offense. If you're going through that again next season, that's where I think you risk that frustration creeping in if the offense doesn't take that next step, because that's the expectation. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have some defensive-minded, you know, and in some ways closed-minded sort of head coach who wants to grind these games out. You have a head coach who you know wants your offense to be explosive. So if you are grinding things out next season, I think mentally, emotionally, that can be something that where it would be difficult for this team in that manner, because you're not going to see the growth that you hope for. And it can be tough when you're not a close to the vest sort of outfit to just grind out games year over year. That's not how this team wants their makeup to be. They want the offense to be more high flying than it has been. And if it doesn't take that step or make that kind of growth, I think that's something that could end up grating at the team a bit, because the expectations of the offense will be better and more explosive than it was this year.
Yeah, that's the expectation, and I think justifiably so is what it should be. This hour brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards, 312-644-6767. Reminder for you, Chargers and Patriots coverage starts this morning on The Score, 11:30. Following that, the Eagles and Saints do battle. Catch both games right here. The final two tickets to the conference championship games next weekend, they're punched this afternoon, and you can catch it all right here on 670 The Score. I'm Nick Szczepkowski alongside Anthony Herron. Plenty more to come, Bears offense development-wise. What steps does Matt Nagy have to take? We have to get into that discussion next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're going to strive to be the best. We're going to do everything we possibly can. But I know this, I wouldn't trade this year. I wouldn't trade a single day for anything. Yeah, I'm proud. I'm happy. And I'm going to let it hurt right now for a little bit. I'm going to feel it, as everybody should. But it's going to make me better.
That's Matt Nagy after the game last Sunday night, where the Bears lose 16-15 to the Philadelphia Eagles and are eliminated in a wild card round of the playoffs. Eagles and Saints today, 3 o'clock. Catch it right here on 670 The Score. Before that, Chargers and Patriots on your airwaves right here on The Score as well. Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you, 312-644-6767. Tomorrow, finally, we get to hear from Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace up at Hallis Hall, 12:30, their press conference is scheduled, where they'll recap everything from this season, preview the offseason. They'll introduce their new defensive coordinator and Chuck Pagano. So all of that will be coming your way tomorrow up at Hallis Hall, and we'll hear it for you on this very radio station.
Then, first utterances since postgame, right?
Yeah.
We haven't heard anything from Nagy since the immediate aftermath of the Bears season coming to a fairly grinding halt.
Yeah.
So he'll, I'm sure, have some perspective on it at this point. He'll likely be willing to smirk about some things, being a week removed from it. And I like him in this coming mode and in what we'll hear tomorrow here on The Score, because he does, you know, in that, I don't know, that a Theo Epstein sort of manner, where he explains himself really well. He's mm-hmm. he's very thoughtful about things, and he's able to compartmentalize those thoughts and deliver them in a manner that people can understand, that people can relate to. So it's almost like this highbrow slash human sort of thing that he's able to pull off when he's addressing the media and kind of letting Bears fans know how he's feeling about things, what his thought process was in certain moments. And he's been willing to kind of let us in on how things have played out in game and in the meeting room as they've put plans together, as they've made personnel decisions, as they made schematic decisions. And we've seen him multiple times during the season kind of wave off, you know, the Bears PR staff, like, no, we're good, we'll keep this rolling. So who knows, he may sit there for 3 hours with the assembled media. This is the last chance that folks will get to talk to him for a while.
It's like the Theo thing. Theo at the very end of the year, it's like his press conferences go, I mean, all day long, because he answers every question that there is. And he sits there, and as disappointing as last year was for the Cubs, and as frustrating as it was in the end of August and into September, like, he sat there and he met the music and he took every stinking question.
I don't think I'd do that if I was him.
I'd
put a cap on
it.
Like, maybe an extended
look at the time,
cap.
Boys. Right. Time to get going home.
Dude, I may lengthen it for a little bit. I wouldn't just sit there
coming up with some meetings
that,
or exit meetings or interviews or something that you'd have to be going through.
Yeah, right.
If it was me, wouldn't want to hear all of that. 312-644-6767, your telephone number to call. And I ask this. We've talked about the offensive development, the step it's supposed to take next year. Talked about the defense, really. Amos, Bryce Callahan. Otherwise, pretty much everything else is going to be there. Your roster's staying there. Is it going to stay as healthy? I don't think you can just count on a defense being as healthy as it was this year. But in terms of the coaching staff, in terms of Ryan Pace, or in terms of Matt Nagy, I should say, where does he improve? Where does he get better? Is it the commitment more so to the run based off of what you saw last night in the Rams game? Is it more of that? Is it play calling wise? It felt like for a large chunk of this year, I guess the Giants game would be an exception. That was kind of a weird game. But it felt like, okay, your first two drives, you feel great about. As the game goes on, this offense, you're not winning battles. You're not winning, whether if you want to call them X's and O's, matches ups, or whatever you want to say. You're not scheming your way to any greatness as a game goes on. A lot of that would happen early on in games. The Packers game, for example, was one of those. I think the first Packers game, the Rams game, I thought was the same way. Some of the offense they came out with very early on, with the end arounds and the fake, well, not the fake motions, but the fake handoffs and end around and all that, and kind of keeping, changing up the positioning of the defensive tackles that are dominant for the Rams. Like, I thought that was genius. It started well. And they scored, what, 15 points that night too? So it didn't get better as the game went on. The defense was scoring touchdowns and whatever else. Where can he improve? Like, what can he do in year two of being a head coach, year three for him of calling plays at the NFL level, would be, that's a step he can take?
I think there's a lot of situations, and I would talk about this on our postgame show over across the street on Bears Postgame Live, where the offense and the way that Nagy and Helfrich would put it together during the week, you could tell there was obviously a lot of thought and detail that would go into it. And within game situations, they always seemed prepared for what they would see from an opposing defense and how they felt they could best outsmart the opponent in those scenarios. One thing I thought that started to develop during the month of December that I want to see continue and perhaps even enhance going into next year is a willingness to not always feel like they have to outsmart the opponent. You know, that was one thing where Matt Nagy is so creative and so willing to show that creativity in game. There's a lot of teams around the league who practice clever plays during the week and then have coaches who don't call them in game. And I think it's a credit to just the modernization of football and having a coach who's willing to, in his first year with the big whistle, willing to go out there in game and throw a level of caution to the wind and do things that we're going to find entertaining, that are going to be cool for us to break down and talk about afterwards. And that's all. It was very enjoyable to do that this year, kind of anticipated it going in. We all talked about it going into the season, and then to actually see throughout the year, like, yes, this is the most creative offense we have ever seen in Chicago. That's great. He has a tendency to want to, he essentially, I believe, Matt Nagy puts the onus on himself in critical situations, and especially in short yardage scenarios where he wants to outsmart the defense in all those moments as well. And to me, again, we saw this start to develop in December a bit, where he doesn't always need to outsmart the opponent. He goes in and he's thought through all these different scenarios, and he does a really nice job of knowing here's what the potential void in the defense could be. If I call this play in this moment, this down and distance, this personnel group, he doesn't always need to do that. He can just get to the point where he's got faith in his personnel. We can say, you know what? If we line up in this formation and they've seen a tendency for us to do this certain way, he can still go ahead and run that play, run it just a simple version of what old school football would be. And I'm going to use the term old school football, and I'm going to sound like a dinosaur, but just to hand it off up the middle to Jordan Howard is okay at times, as opposed to a QB option or a shovel pass or something with a lot of the motion and tricks of bringing defenders on the field and running them back and forth. And, you know, those things I think should be more of a supplement in critical downs and distances, as opposed to the main cog in the offense, which right now they still seem to be.
You can make fun of yourself and call yourself a dinosaur all you want, but face it, last night, I mean, the poster boy for what the modern NFL head coach is and what everyone is hiring in Sean McVay, last night, what did he do offensively?
Yep.
41 rushing attempts, was it?
43.
Even north of that, 43.
Yeah.
How much of that was, oh, there's a bunch of motion going on, and this is ultimately going up the middle. Like, there was a ton of that. Like, it was just, it wasn't creative run pattern. It wasn't anything too fancy. Like, I don't know. I look back last week, and again, I don't want to take anything away from the Eagles defense because Fletcher Cox blew up running lanes like crazy.
Yeah.
But it's just like, there wasn't a commitment to it either. It simply was not there. Like, it's, all right, get stuffed one time on a possession and don't go back to it whatsoever and just shy away from it and better pass on first down next possession instead. Like, it was very reactionary and not trusting kind of your own guys, and that's where I'd like to see a step taken as well. 312-644-6767 is your telephone number to call. Text messages always welcome. Bottom of the hour on the Score being brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers, Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now. NUSports.com is where you go to get those. Coming up today, Joe Ostrowski is going to join us in about 45 minutes or so to discuss these NFL games this weekend or this afternoon that you can catch both right here on 670 The Score. But next, after this timeout, you know him from Pro Football Weekly. I've done shows with him before. He's a football mind of football minds. Eric Edholm breaks down the divisional weekend, the state of the Bears, everything else NFL. Coming up next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Gurley gets the carry, bursts up the middle at the 30-yard line, turns left to the 20, and turns on the speed at the 10, across the 5, and he shrugs off a tackle from Awuzie into the end zone for the touchdown. Todd Gurley, 35 yards. The knee looking just fine as the Rams take a 19-7 lead.
Heard it here last night, right on 670 The Score. Todd Gurley running up, around, over, and through the Dallas Cowboys. Catch it all right here again today on The Score. Chargers and Patriots coverage starts 11:30, followed by Eagles and Saints as the divisional weekend winds down in the NFL. It's Nick Szczepkowski, Anthony Herron with you, 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. And for more on the divisional matchups, the potential NFC, AFC championship games we will see next week, We go out to the hotline, welcome in one Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly, kind enough to pick up the phone this morning. Good morning, Eric. What's happening, my man?
Gentlemen, what's happening?
Hey.
Everything's good on this end, man. Just settling in for day two of, I think a lot of people say the best weekend of NFL action.
Yeah, it's hard to argue when you have Saturday into Sunday, you have two games and the best eight teams remaining. One thing that sticks out to me looking at this is, I saw this, I think Football Perspective put it out there. It's that from 89 to 1999, six of the Super Bowl champions, of those 11 champions, had the highest scoring offense. From 2000 until today, only the 2009 New Orleans Saints had the highest scoring offense. This year, in case you're wondering, KC is number one in scoring offense. They're obviously in the conference championship game. The Rams are two, the Saints three, the Patriots four on that list. Potential for one through four to be all awake, all alive, entering next weekend. What does that say about not the state of football, but kind of the construction of a football roster and how you win games in the NFL this year?
Today? No, obviously, you know, you think about the construction of a roster. You start with quarterbacks, and you know, if you have an established one and you are in a position where you have to offer them a contract extension, that's going to eat up a large percentage of your salary cap, and it trickles down from there. A lot of high paid wide receivers and whatever. You know, discounts there are at running back, you make up for with elite tackles, and even guards are getting paid these days. And, you know, top tight ends are hard to find. So, I mean, it's not as if there aren't defense positions. We know here, you know, with Khalil Mack and such that don't get paid, but those tend to be reserved for kind of the elite players. And you almost have to go all in the other direction if you want to try that. So, you know, teams that have the quarterbacks on the rookie deals obviously get kind of an advantage in that regard. But you're right. I mean, just look at the coaching hires to start with. It looks like six of the eight head coaching hires are going to have an offensive background. And, yeah, I think the rules are kind of set up to favor that side of the ball. So there's clearly at least a short-term trend that's going in that direction.
We tend to think of these things in windows when it's kind of, you know, playoff time and when teams seem to be set up to compete for championships like the Bears are at this point. Obviously, like a number of other teams still playing football around the National Football League are at this point. Who are the teams that you feel like when we're thinking of a window, that their window may be closing or is perhaps the closest to being closed with that desperation that a front office might be in to start throwing money at a problem or we don't have necessarily a few years to develop guys? Who are teams around the league that you view who are actually, you know, legitimately in a winning position that their window is really closing or close to being closed now?
Yeah, I feel like the window is probably closer to being closed for New England. And I've been one of these people who've kind of laughed at other folks who have said, like, oh, Brady's done. I mean, we've been saying that since, you know, 2012 or 13, yeah. I'm guessing. So, but if you look at this team, right, I mean, there's been talk about Rob Gronkowski. This could be his last game if the Patriots don't win today. He could retire, you know, have a movie career, you know, wrestle warthogs, do whatever he wants to do, you know. But yeah, that's a huge piece of their puzzle going down. I mean, Brady has sort of doubled down on 2019. I think he'll be back. I think Belichick has changed his stance on coaching as, you know, into his 70s, perhaps. There's some talk that he's not close to being done all of a sudden, even with doubt last year. 1 year ago, we didn't know if he'd be back. So even with that, I still say that the Patriots, you know, their window of elite greatness. They might still be able to crank out another couple of, you know, 10 or 11 win seasons here in the next couple of years. But the type of team that can, you know, go all the way and win a Super Bowl, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this Chargers team they're facing today is young, fast. They have a four-man pass rush. They don't really need to blitz. Athletic defensive backs. I think they're going to give them some trouble, especially on that side of the ball. And you know, it's not as if this Patriots offense looked real healthy. So that's one that comes to mind. I still say the Saints have a window, even if it feels like they're kind of going all in on this season in particular.
This Chargers team, I mean, is this about as tough of an opponent has gone into Foxborough that we can remember? I mean, if it's not for the Chargers being in the AFC West and having the Chiefs atop their division all year long, who are, I think, as big a story as there was in the league this year, I mean, you're probably seeing a ton more bouquets thrown at the feet of Philip Rivers and company. And this Chargers team's legit as hell.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, a year ago, the Patriots had to overcome a big deficit against the Jacksonville Jaguars in the AFC title game. But they were quarterbacked by Blake Bortles. It was an uneven team. It wasn't, you know, even though that team was supposed to be able to play from ahead, you know, with their defense and with their run game. You know, it was still, this season proved that they were a little bit more flawed than we may have realized. So, yeah, I think just using a one-year window in mind, yeah, they're facing a round earlier, a team that I think is more balanced, more tough, you know, is more prepared to make a run than the team they faced prior to the Super Bowl last year. So, yeah, I would say that's fair to say. Now, they've had some tough games against the Ravens over the years, but this Chargers team, I really think, is primed to let us down. No, I feel like every year we say that, right? They, right when we start pumping them up, right when we start kind of elevating them to that next level, they miss a field goal, they make a bonehead, a mistake of some sort. That said, all I've seen lately is a pretty athletic, tough, deep team that, you know, has built kind of all layers of their roster now and doesn't have any huge glaring weaknesses if everybody's healthy.
How do we know from a Chicago perspective, what can give Bears fans some confidence that the Bears aren't going to be, and I'm not even sure Jacksonville may be an apt comparison because they were a really young team who did some things last year that fell flat, but maybe Minnesota doesn't work as well. Think of Atlanta from a couple of years ago, you know, the Super Bowl appearance, and then they've fallen flat the last couple of years. What about the current Bears makeup feels more sustainable than some of these other teams we've seen in a similar scenario?
I think that's a great question, and I think that's going to be kind of the theme of the offseason because I think, you know, free agency and draft aside, just a broad view, it looks like the Bears are going to play a tougher schedule, and now they're going to be playing from ahead. So they have some real challenges, and everybody, you know, reasonably or not, is going to expect Mitch Trubisky to take a step forward. So they have some obstacles, right? New assistant coaches, there's going to be a little bit of turnover on the roster, but the expectations and – you know, getting everybody's best game, I think, along the way or close to it. Those are realistic things. I mean, repeating the record they had this year is going to be tough. But, you know, I think there's still a great hope that there's a young core in place. You have about somewhere between 8 and 12 core guys that are, you know, if they're not elite at their position, they're darn close to it. They're at the top 10 individually at their respective positions. So, you know, it's hard without a first and a second-round pick, and it's hard with limited cap space if you want to try to keep, you know, Bryce Callahan or Adrian Amos or Bobby Massey or those guys. But, you know, if Ryan Pace has shown something, it's that he's uncovered some gems in day two and day three of the draft. And if they can be smart and savvy about their picks, you keep kind of adding to this depth a little bit and keep developing the talent you have. You know, I don't think they're going to fall off a cliff by any means. So I think they're at least going to be competitive for the next couple years.
Looking at that, it's interesting what you bring up because the Bears sit in the, you feel like it's a good position for years to come. Young team, defenses, roster control, and all of that. But also with a lack of salary cap room, lack of first or second round draft pick this year, it's hard to envision any addition being a grand addition that puts them over the top. How much growth can be expected? How much development in that sense of just another year together can be expected to close the gap that they closed significantly this year but still remains between them and an NFC championship?
Yeah, I mean, I think coaches will tell you that, you know, rookies from their rookie year to their second year experience a lot of growth. From second year to third year sometimes, though, depending on the position, you know, tougher positions that are, you know, take years to kind of master, you know, that also can be a growth from within element that gets overlooked. You know, we tend to do these little score sheets at the end of the offseason. All right, who had the best draft? Who had the best free agency? Who did this and who did that? Well, you also have to look at the youth on the roster and say which, you know, first, second, and third year players now going into their second, third, and fourth years can become that much more dynamic. You know, how much more can we expect out of Tariq Cohen? Is Roquan Smith going to be at some point a top five inside linebacker in the league? You know, does Leonard Floyd play more like the guy he was in the second half of the season than the first? Those sorts of questions. So, you know, those are the things that often get overlooked, but teams are always aware of how much youth they have on the roster and how much kind of growth they have from within without having to make a bunch of splashy free agent moves.
Speaking of splashy free agent moves, we don't know where or how the Bears would end up getting the resources to do anything really big. You know, there's obviously some names out there at running back. And running back is a spot that I do think will need to be addressed in some manner. I'm just not completely sure how they go about doing it, because Tariq Cohen, at his size, I don't see him being a 15 to 20 carry sort of back, or even a 20 plus touch kind of guy, where however they get him the ball. And we know at this point that Jordan Howard, it appears, won't be a guy who gets that level of touches either. If they're going to add depth or upgrade the running back position, does it need to be through the draft, or is there something creative the Bears could try and do to get new personnel there with some of the guys who are walking the street right now?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I mean, on the surface, you know, you can look at two games from yesterday and say, who were kind of the shocking stars or the standout players? It was Damian Williams for the Chiefs, right? Who was, you know, as soon as Kareem Hunt got released, everybody said, okay, this is going to be a huge blow for the Chiefs. They don't really have anybody. Well, Damian Williams has kind of stolen this job. He's in a great situation with lots around him, right? You know, then the next game, C.J. Anderson was cut by the Panthers after 25 touches all season long, nine or 10 games. Sits on the Raiders roster for a couple of weeks, is, you know, just toiling. Goes to the Rams, and all of a sudden he's a crucial element of what they're doing in the playoffs. Now, that's a little bit more of an extreme example, but I think it's a good reminder that, you know, running back, as much as you'd love to have a Gurley or an Elliott or an Alvin Kamara or something like that, you know, Kamara was a third-round pick, but those other two guys, you know, high draft picks, top 10 picks, as great as they are to have, there's also so many examples around the league of players who can – you know, be these kind of all-around performers and solid guys. And, I mean, I suppose there's somebody you could take. You know, T.J. Yeldon is a free agent who, you know, has maybe underperformed a little in Jacksonville. Maybe he's somebody they feel like has a second leg, you know, to his career, something like that. You can go the veteran route, like a Bilal Powell, kind of a do-it-all guy for the Jets who's been kind of lost in that situation there. So I think there's some mid-priced or lower-end priced free agent running backs who would make some sense. But then there's also a draft that, I mean, I don't know, Anthony, if you looked at these guys at all, there may not be a first-round pick this year, Josh Jacobs from Alabama, but it seems like the second, third, and fourth-round depth at that spot is pretty darn good. Maybe not special players, but pretty good depth of usable players. And that seems like the kind of guy that Matt Nagy would want. I don't think they're ever going to have a true workhorse, but they will have useful, versatile playmakers back there who can help out.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate, my assessment of this year's draft so far. A lot of guys who are, you know, I don't think walking the red carpet for Thursday night, I don't think we're going to see any running backs this year with guys who are anticipated to go high in this year's draft crop. But, you know, and maybe there's someone off the radar I haven't gotten to yet, but yeah, I think that's accurate. We're probably looking at day two type of talent at the running back position, and then it gets really deep from there. And frankly, that's okay in the NFL these days, because a lot of teams have gotten by with that. You ran off a lot of really good examples for guys who are making plays in the playoffs right now that were not early draft picks that have been released or been shipped around to multiple teams and are still finding their way to be a key cog in NFL offenses. So it doesn't necessarily need to be that first round guy. So, but from what I gather from what you're saying, you don't think it's likely that a Le'Veon Bell, a Kareem Hunt, you know, someone with more of a resume in the NFL at this point is going to be available. It wouldn't seem that the Bears would go after a guy like that, correct?
You know, with Hunt in specific, believe me, I've thought about it, and I've asked around a little bit, you know, where's this guy going to end up? Are the Bears a possibility? You know, if they see the right growth and they feel like this is somebody who earnestly made a mistake and wants to, you know, prove that this is a one-time thing and that this will never happen again, that's all fine and good. And I suspect he will have a job somewhere. I don't think it'll be in Chicago, even with the Nagy connection, even with the obvious fit in this type of scheme. I don't know. Just the more I've sort of kicked it around, the less I think that – I mean, Ryan Pace has done a great job, you know, and credit John Fox, too, for being a little part of that of – I kind of say cleaning up the locker room, but getting rid of players who were more sort of selfishly motivated and getting a young group of hungry players sounds a little cliche, but that's kind of what they're built about, you know? And I like that element about the Bears roster. I think they have, you know, their egos have not gotten ahead of them at this point. They still know there's a mountain to climb. There's a lot more work to do. It doesn't seem like they have any kind of clubhouse cancers that I'm aware of anyway. So, even if you think Kareem Hunt isn't that guy, the optics, the perception of it is a little bit risky. And then Le'Veon Bell, I don't know. It's just too much money. I can't envision them finding a way to shoehorn him inside that cap.
In terms of Le'Veon Bell, C.J. Anderson coming off a scrap heap and doing what he did last night, that cost Le'Veon Bell any money in the view of running backs in the league?
Great question. I still think there are enough desperate teams out there, and I still think there'll be multiple bidders for him where, yeah, in the back of their minds, they're probably saying, sure, we could get that guy, but you still got to hit him. You still have to find that player. So even if you trust your scouts, even if you know your system and who fits it, you know, that player you may not be able to sign that guy at the price you want, or you may not be able to draft that player at the spot you want. So there's still enough teams out there. Like a Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I'm sure Bruce Arians is rolling in down to the facility out down there thinking, I can change Jameis Winston. You know, I can convince DeSean Jackson to come back at a pay cut and be a team player. I can bring in a Le'Veon Bell, and that'll be the missing ingredient for this offense. So, you know, again, off the top of my head, I'm just thinking of somebody who would make sense for that, or the New York Jets, who are just dying for offensive talent and have, you know, tens of millions of dollars in salary cap room. So I suspect he'll have multiple bidders, and that, you know, his market will end up pretty fine.
Eric, appreciate the time. As always, he's Eric Edholm at Pro Football Weekly. He's where you can find his work, and at Eric_Edholm on Twitter. We'll be following all your work. Enjoy the rest of the divisional round. We'll do it again soon.
All right, fellas. Good hearing from you. See you soon.
Thanks, Z.
Eric Edholm right there. 670 The Score, 670thescore.com is what you have. Reminder, divisional games, Chargers and Patriots, 11:30 here on The Score. It's when coverage starts. Then it's the Eagles and Saints as soon as that one is over. I'm Nick Szczepkowski alongside Anthony Herron. He wants to give me a hard time about something I wrote earlier this week.
You've earned it.
That I stand by. We discuss that next on The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.